Your Holiness, welcome back. I hope you had a good lunch. We certainly did, and I hope that everyone did enjoy their lunch break. And we're happy to welcome you all back, and of course, especially Your Holiness, to our afternoon session. And I'm very pleased to introduce to you Vasudevi Reddy, or Vasu as we know her, who is a professor of developmental and cultural psychology at Portsmouth, at the University of Portsmouth in the United Kingdom. She actually did some of her education here in Hyderabad, India itself, and then continued at Edinburgh in Scotland. And she's a very well-known psychologist who works on the on very young children, on infants. For example, she has published a book that's been translated into several languages, published by Harvard University Press, called How Infants Know Minds. Very interesting question. And she's going to talk to us today about the development of a sense of self in infants. We'll go until about 2 or 2:15, and then we'll have some time for a conversation after that. 3 p.m. tea break, and 3:30 p.m. we'll have our question and answer session with the community. So, Vasu, without any more delay.
Okay. Your Holiness, I'd like to talk today about the beginnings of self in engagement, like very, very early. But first, I'd like to begin with something. I cannot say the Tibetan very well. Sangye la kyab suchi, cho la kyab suchi, gedhun la kyab suchi. I say this because the Sanskrit version of it, I say it for two reasons. One, as a thank you for this incredible honor that you're doing by listening, by inviting me here. Thank you to Mind and Life. Thank you to Sarah J. and to everyone. And I say this also because these lines, Buddham Sharanam Gacchami, Dharmam Sharanam Gacchami, and Sangham Sharanam Gacchami, I remembered when I was starting to write this talk that my mother, who's no more, explained it to me when I was a child and what it meant. And somehow, even now, when I say those words, my hair stands on end. So it is some, in a strange way, it is a part of myself. And because I'm talking about the way in which the self contains the world, that is one of the things I'm talking about, it seemed to me that is a good reason to connect.
No, Chunjungan.
Okay, so why should we talk about the beginnings of self? Well, there are very many obvious reasons. One is, if you don't understand where something comes from, not in concept, not in theory, but on the ground, you have a harder time understanding it when it is developed. And there is a good reason, many good reasons for us to understand self, person or phenomenal self or conventional person. Terrorism in the world, unhappiness in the world, abuse in the world, all of these are done by selves. So what is it? Why is it that these selves are the way they are? Now, I'm not going to answer those questions about terrorism and unhappiness and abuse, but I'm going to talk about how we can begin to address them and one way in which we can begin to address them. So I've got three questions. What is the self? When does it begin to emerge? And how does it emerge? And in relation to what is the self, I'm going to speak about those first two questions very briefly. Mainly, I want to focus on the third one. So the first two questions, what is the self? 2 points. One is that without doubt, even in utero, certainly at birth and immediately after, the self has got, the person, the baby, has got very, very fluid boundaries. That's which constitutes the self, is full of fuzzy, permeable boundaries. But the other point is that even so, that self in utero and at birth has got a coherent affective core. And for me, that raises a little bit of a...
Affective core, like the emotion, affective...
Effective emotions. So when we talk about when does it begin to emerge, my answer is very, very early. Everything that we can see about the self, the infant acting in the world, even before birth, but certainly after birth, is way before, as psychologists understand it, concepts begin to emerge. So John would say to me, ah, yes, that's concepts, but that's not conceptuality. Okay, but that's a term and a discussion for another time. But this is certainly before something that we consider as clear, bounded categories begin to emerge. Okay, so now for the really important question, well, how does it emerge? Because if we don't understand that, we can't do anything about it. Well, the point, the central point I want to make is that if you're pregnant and you have a fetus growing, the way in which that fetus or newborn infant can develop as a being is by engaging with a world which addresses him or her as a you, as a thou. So if you don't have a boundary with which that infant or fetus can engage, hit, like, smile at, reach for, touch, feel, if you don't have another person who looks at it, looks at the infant, you have got a very destructive ground for engagement, for development of the self. And the last point I want to make is one of the key things which started my work in this area is that there is something so powerful in playfulness. And I think this is probably particularly pertinent to Your Holiness, because in everything that I've seen of you in the last 2 days, one quality is very clear. It is a kind of a tendency to play, to joke, to tease. Yeah. And that's something that infants, even in the first year, are showing. So they are showing something which makes forms and boundaries, and they're showing something which immediately breaks them, just for fun. And I think that is a crucial.
Kuyu dan dewa cece, pa engagement, dendek tu ane, ane kuyu ku su susu pa cawa cewa dalam di land su yungu yoba tan, kuni shugian tegu yoba tan, dendek engagement ke tu ane, ane sini ngai dushi tu yungu yores, ane di ngai dushi di shuk shur shur royal ya, buku tu ki playfulness de, kece mesti bercakap tuus, nau, zaman zeta. Okay,
let's go to the first question. What is the self? I said fluid boundaries. Well, here's it's a study that I love. It was done on what is the intonation of babies crying immediately after birth? French mothers, German mothers have different intonation, right? As far as I understand, Mathieu will confirm this. French adults have an intonation which rises
intonation.
And then falls at the end. German intonation apparently rises, falls very early, and then goes down. Now the babies.
Larin. Ame pool ke ishe urwa. Ame pool ke ishe du gala. The French kiti ke ya pa che chana ma pap tan tan. German ke ame ke ya pan chana ma pap tan ke liya keba yores.
So it's slow. It's an early drop and then gradual. Now the babies have the same feature at birth. Okay, so they have been learning in utero. So you might not say that crying is a very significant part of the self, but it is quite a big part of the self. So if that is learned.
This is saying that, for example, in the classical Indian theory of language, we identify different sides from which different kinds of syllables, sounds emerge. You know, some of them are more from the, you know, vocal cord area, some from deeper area, the different consonants, and they are thought to have different locations. So, and here... So
I feel, you see, French language, German language, the
due to language,
there's a difference.
Yeah.
So His Holiness is wondering whether it's better to say the French language versus German language,
yes,
rather than the French people versus German people.
Yes, completely. Yeah. Sorry. Yes, absolutely. It is the
We have a living example of French here.
I know. Absolutely. It is the intonation patterns of the language that are learned before birth. So by the time they are born, they cry differently.
Okay. They cry differently. That's the point.
The crying of the newborn baby is different. It follows the intonation pattern.
French and German
So they learn it. They learn the sound. They can hear. The hearing is very developed in the before birth. So
am I right in the hearing that they actually cry differently?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right at birth.
And even really? Before birth, talking about built-in feelings, built-in emotional expressions, there is some work recently showing that towards the end, in the last month or 2 months of pregnancy, there are expressions of joy. This is with ultrasound inside the womb, showing expressions of joy, expressions of distress and pain.
So the ultrasound is part of your
risk. Okay, so let us go to when does it begin to emerge? So I said very early. How do we tell? Well, one view, older view in psychology, has been that at birth, infants cannot tell the difference between self and non-self. Okay? Now, if this were true, any sensation coming into the body, you don't know whether it's coming from inside or from outside. And this has got bearing very much also with Kathy's talk. Whereas what we have found is that some people would argue, this cannot be true. It cannot be true because even before birth, and certainly after birth, babies are moving in the world. So if you move your arm in space, you are already aware of the relation between your arm and a little bit of space, okay? So there's a minimum of some kind of awareness of self in relation to the world. And one study showed that, so assume that you cannot tell the difference between self and non-self. If that were true, if I touched you on your cheek, or if your own hand accidentally touched you on your cheek, you should not be able to tell the difference. Okay? If you cannot distinguish self from non-self.
The psychologist
So one study looked at newborn babies. Now, one of the things that newborn babies do, if you touch on cheek, they turn to eat. They turn to automatically. You touch it, it's a reflex, okay? So when the other person touched the baby, they turned to eat. When the baby's own hand accidentally touched it, they turned to eat much less. They turned to, it's called a rooting reflex, was much less. So already at birth, they are aware of the sensation of own action from other action. Okay, let us go to this big question now. So how does it work? I mean, we are being busy with arguments about whether the self is constructed as an illusion, if it has some kind of reality, what is that reality? Well, maybe this will give us a little bit of an argument. So I'm going to talk about the first point, in direct engagement with another. What does this mean? What could it mean? Well, One philosopher, a Jewish theologian called Martin Buber, who's one of the very influential figures in 20th century Western philosophy, he talked about two different ways in which we can know anything. One way of knowing is without concepts, without words, okay, where we actually directly, if you like, for the space of only a few moments, can connect with something. So for a moment when your eyes meet, maybe there is something that you know. For a moment when I'm crying at a sunset, maybe there is something that I am relating to in the sunset before I say, oh, that is a beautiful sunset. So as soon as I say the word, that early way of knowing is broken, and I now enter another way of knowing. The first way of knowing he calls a direct I-thou or I-you way of knowing. The other way is called an I-it. So you might think, so if I look at you, Your Holiness, and I smile at you, or you smile, like you did yesterday. I was sitting there, and you smiled in that direction. And I thought, he can't smile at me, I'm not important. So I didn't respond, and you waved. And I thought, What you were doing there and what I was doing responding eventually is a moment of I-thou connection, okay? Only for a moment. Now, it could be that I address you or another person not as a you. I speak to Jimpa and say, he is a translator. I don't speak to Jimpa as a you or something, right? So there is a difference in the way we can connect with another person. Okay.
Maradandi Martin Buber Tawat Shevore. Martin Buber Tawatiliatan, the Jewish philosopher, Ki, Yu Kantakan, Ya, Deva Chebene, Telia, Deva Chitanga, Rilvini, Grace, Chickti, and a co Kadu, the Pichung Mosungu, Yon Dabji, Topazan Kimoyan, which a cook, Tegalia, Yam Yongutone, the Michiki Tombatu and Dugala, and I and Yous, Tao, that was the Yurwa, I and Tao, the relationship, the Chibuti. I and it slapped the panango the yul soon. You the usenche, susu usenche, panango the yulishache, and the quotan teta and curtas. Two children double lame yores. The dinishesu yores. The ditawat did no joke attend the Samuel Cerebatulia, Shukinchi potatoes, but the morant and the Martin Buber get the sugar.
But this can happen in many, many ways. So, I can listen to someone and say, oh, that person is, just a philosopher, don't want to listen to them. So the label, the category of philosopher, comes between me and that person. Or I can teach a student and be busy thinking about, look, we have to get to the next point, right? Not actually relate to the person. I can relate to someone through the rules, not directly. So there are many ways in which the connection is interfered with by the word, the concept, the rule, agenda. It's destructive. It can be destructive. So one other thing that this involves, this is what I mean by directing in the ideal form, is something to do with genuineness. Now, I think this is an issue because if there is to be genuineness in connection, it means that what I have, I am showing to you. That I'm really revealing something and that you are really perceiving it and that there is something real that is being given and taken and exchanged, right? And that I think that is absolutely crucial. So maybe that has an implication for perception of the real in thinking. But it requires being open to the other and being open in oneself. It only lasts for moments, and sometimes you can have this also with things, not just people, although that is simpler. Okay, what about babies, huh? What do babies need to have this complicated I-thou engagement? Are they specially good at it, or are they less capable? Well, I think three things, yeah? First thing is they need to be open. So the baby needs to be interested and have a desire to engage with something or someone. They need the world or the other person to respond, to recognize them as a person. And they, the baby, needs to recognize that response as what it is. Not just, oh, there is an arm moving, what is it, right? There needs to be a recognition of the emotional and connectional nature of it. Okay, are babies open to the world? Well, they're also open to objects. So this is a newborn baby, less than 1 hour old. This is in India, so that's why the baby has got a lot of hair. When I show this to European audiences, they cannot believe this baby is newborn. Indian babies are very hairy.
European babies are very hairy. America babies are very hairy. They are very hairy. They are very hairy. They are very hairy. They are very hairy. So there's a difference. Solanus wasn't aware. There's a difference. The amount of hair.
Western babies are a bit bald. So we know that what I want you to say. Okay, look at that picture. Look at two things. One is the ball is held within a certain close enough distance from the baby that the vision does not have to adjust focal length and it's reasonably clear. Okay? Then you look at what the baby is doing. The eyes are focused on the ball. The arm is focused on the ball. The other arm is moving and the feet are moving. So if you can see your foot, it's all stretched trying to get towards the ball. Now, this is something, a phenomenon called pre-reaching. This is a newborn, born into a world it does not know, acting sensibly in space towards objects it has never seen before. So the minimum you can argue is that the body of the newborn and the visual system and the psychological interests are geared to be interested in engaging with the world. So this is a picture, but it has been shown in a number of studies that they can make rough reaches approximately correct in that direction.
Some drops. Coordination yamu chetu mazang tos juta thu marwa ta juye ko tsur bish.
Newborn infants are particularly interested in faces, in human voice sounds, which they have heard before birth. Okay? Now, one very controversial phenomenon is whether or not, and this is the claim that has been made, whether or not newborn infants can imitate another person's face, which they have never seen before, and they have never seen their own face in a mirror. So if I stick my tongue out at you, and you have to know that your tongue is something like mine, right?
Yes.
To do that? Well, they've never seen their own face, so how do they know? Anyway, the controversy is, can they do it? So there is big debate, there's a very radical finding saying, yes, they can. Big argument about, is it really imitation? Okay, I don't want to talk about imitation. I want to talk about whether or not it is real imitation. What the newborn babies are doing is being interested. And if you do something to me, I'm doing something in conversation, in dialogue, in return, right? I'm so interested that I want to do something to grab you. Now, this is a video that I would like to show you. It was done by my colleague Yanis Kougimoutsakis in Crete. Actually, it was taken in Uppsala. And these are all the clips of three babies, all less than half an hour of birth. Okay? Now, the first one is, it's a very old film, so please bear with me. The first one, the model sticks his tongue out, two or three times, a few times, and then waits. What I want you to look at is how the baby is looking while he's sticking his tongue out, then waiting, then what the baby is doing in return. The second two babies, he opens his mouth wide, like that, and then again waits.
Maybe they are asking for milk to be fed.
It could be. But the point is, they are asking for milk at the time when there is a pause in the conversation, right? They're doing it in response. That's the key thing for me.
I think because of that, in my villages of the tradition, the child, as soon as out of birth, you see, give some kind of the
Yes, there is a sweet water.
Oh.
Yes.
Give. So that's our tradition.
But it doesn't stop them doing it.
So, you see, my case, my elder sister, you see, take care of me immediately, you see.
After
birth. Come out my mother's womb, she immediately, you see, took. And then I think maybe wash or something. Then give that sweet water. So my sister then told me, "Oh, at that time you very hungry."
You were very hungry.
It
drank a lot. So then, when His Holiness elder sister then hugged her and carried him.
Yeah.
And then, it pooed.
So logical. You see, drink too much, so come out. Immediately.
I will keep your glass far away. Okay, so now I want you to look and see what you think the baby is doing. Okay? Three babies.
All same age.
20 minutes, 10 minutes.
Wow.
Girl, 20 minutes. Oops. Okay.
There.
15 minutes, boy. Probably not asking for milk.
No. Huh? His Holiness was saying that what's the problem with saying that this is simple imitation?
Because the mechanism for explaining it is not clear. So if I have never seen my own tongue, that is why there is a lot of debate about it. How do I know that your visual tongue and my kinesthetic, my felt tongue is the same. So one explanation that has been offered is that there is something called a mirror system in the brain which matches the seen and the done. So the action potential and the visually perceived action come into the same kind of coding, if you like. So that's one explanation about how it could be. Other explanations, there are many explanations, but some are that it is like a conversation and it is becoming somehow clear, somehow drawn from the infant. So the point I want to make is that infant, newborn, is very interested in connecting. Very little connection, but there is something there that they are.
Let it.
this very, very early stage, will the children be able to make distinctions between a human face and, say, like a dog?
Simply, you see, because of the response in the face of human being, face of dog, any differences?
I don't know. I don't know with animals. They should be able to tell the different patterns. I mean, there is a built-in preference for even a drawing of a face.
With
eyes and a
mouth.
Okay. So that was an example of the infant being open when the other person does something. But the infant baby also does things towards the other people. And you need a response or recognition from the other person. Now, this is an example of a very intense smiling between a grandfather and a baby. And the smiling is absolutely mutual, and it's the connection is intense.
How old is this child?
I think this was about 3 months.
3 months.
Okay. Now, smiling is an interesting phenomenon. One of my old gurus, Colwyn Trevarthen from Edinburgh, wrote something. He says, a smile is one of those behaviors. It can't do anything in the world. It can't have any effect on the world except through somebody else perceiving it. The purpose of a smile, it could be to express what is inside, but it functions because you see it. If you didn't, if there was no one to see it,
lare mare dan de kemo se zum zumul se jorwa kemo kemo shob se de zum zumul wa zumul wa se de kurang ge chawa de sheng ge thong chal de go res sheng ge mato na kemo shob de le me se ke go bas ke yo mare sam kol me se cheles ke yo mare sam.
The third point about what do the babies need to have this direct engagement with another person. You do something to me. You say, hello, how are you? Now I need, or you smile at me, or you frown at me. I need to be able to see your action as meaningful. I need to be able to perceive, if you like, the psychological meaning or content of what you are doing to me. If I don't, I will just see a lot of shapes in the air. If I do perceive it, that is when it confirms me. That is when it says, they are smiling at me. So I have to perceive it. How can this happen? How does it happen? Well, okay, a little bit of stepping backwards here to theory. Now, in the Descartes tradition, which I know Your Holiness is very negative about, and so are most scientists, other minds are not perceivable. They need to be inferred. Okay? So I can perceive your behavior in the Cartesian scheme. I cannot perceive your mind. Only mind I can perceive is mine. So that point, if it is true, means that the baby has to calculate, has to work out or conceptualize or theorize, there is a widening of the lips, that must mean happiness or something like that. It's a bit crude, but some kind of inference is needed. So modern approaches which reject mind-body dualism, right? Nobody accepts mind-body dualism in science, but a lot of people, a lot of modern psychological science accepts mind-behavior dualism. So I can see the behavior, I can't see the mind. So if we take this approach that minds need to be inferred, babies cannot see them. They don't have the capacity to make that, those kinds of inferences. You also have a science which is a very detached science, a science where the baby is sitting and working out, okay, what is he feeling? He's nodding his head. It's a very kind of a third-person methodology and a third-person theory in science. Now, is there an alternative, okay, which there is? The alternative could be that we reject not only mind-body dualism, but also mind-behavior dualism, and say that other minds can be perceived to the extent that we are in engagement with them. So if you, I am a newborn baby, and you smile at someone else, it probably will not have so much meaning for me. But if you smile at me, that immediately becomes something that is relevant to me and which starts to have meaning. Okay? But if you take the baby as somebody involved in that knowledge, then you have a second person methodology where the distinction between the knower and that which is to be known is not great. In fact, the known is known because of the connection. So what does this mean if we take it to babies? It means that to the extent that other people speak to the infant, their minds start to become clearer to the baby. And that is where mind becomes available.
Now, the first person, the second person. Now.
Okay, so here is an example of a ten week old baby. It's actually my son who was always, you will see. So it's an example of very early dialogue. Okay, now what is interesting in this in these at this age? Trevarthan called it, in fact, discussed it as proto conversation. It's a kind of early form of dialogue. No words, no concepts of the usual kind, a lot of interest, some turn-taking, a lot of tuning in of emotion. Okay? And what I want, I will show you a video here. What I want you to look at is how the emotion, there is some turn-taking, but the emotion builds up and up and up. And then at some point at the end, I laugh because he's so loud. And I say, are you singing? And he kind of laughs. And it is such a clear parallel to how we might exchange without words sometimes. Okay, so this is a 10-week-old baby doing what they call proto-conversation.
The sound?
Is your sound turned
yeah,
up?
Yeah, my sound is up.
Your system sound is up? Sound? Laptop sound? Laptop sound?
Okay, we've got it.
We have no sound. We lost the image now. Yeah.
Sorry, I'll just do it again because we lost the sound there. We've lost the sound again.
So that's coming out of the computer.
Oh, God.
Let's see this. Pause it.
It's only coming from here. It's not coming there.
We lost the video now? Where is the... How's the video work?
Are you singing?
No.
Yep, we lost the video.
Oh, that's because it's fallen off.
We need the VGA cord.
Okay, but the sound isn't coming out of the speakers.
It is, but it's just very, very quiet.
It's only coming out of here, I think.
Alice.
Oh,
yeah, good.
Well,
but we have no image.
You little smiley. You little smiley. Aren't you? Yes, you are. Hi, good. Hi, good. Hey. What? Are you singing? Okay.
Sorry? I was never in presentation. Ha ha. Okay. Sorry about that. Okay, so another issue that's again with a two-month-old baby, right? This is another idea that has had a lot of conflict. How do we become aware of ourselves? And one view, you saw yesterday or day before, somebody showed the example of the mirror doing self-recognition. Now, one standard view is that until you can do self-recognition, you don't really have an idea of the self. And babies don't get self-recognition until 1.5 years. So the argument, the theory is, the older theory is, that until you have an idea of the self, a concept of self, how will you feel embarrassed when somebody looks at you? Why would you feel shame or pride?
But the experience of pain and pleasure is there very, very early, even in fetus.
That's right. Yes.
Not a matter.
Have an experience of pain and pleasure, you know, some association with the self has to be there.
Self,
of course, there is no concept. There is no.
But the question here is: can you feel shy if I look at you and I say something too nice? Can you feel sometimes a little bit embarrassed without a concept?
Not when the child is very, very small.
Yep. Well, my point also is that no problem.
Yes.
Because the cause, the what is needed to feel shy is somebody looking at you, to feel that you are the object of attention, not to have a concept which filters your emotion.
So
for example, like the 6 months old, in Richie's example of children showing preference towards helping behavior, you know, they are able to recognize what is a helping behavior,
yes,
versus a hindering behavior,
yeah. Yeah.
But they have no language.
I agree. Okay?
You see that at 3 months too.
But Vasu's point is, in order to feel embarrassed, do you need a concept of self?
And my point is, no, you don't. You need an emotional reaction to attention. And you see this with a 2.5-month-old baby. So what you will see here is the mother is carrying the baby and looking in the mirror. So the baby does not know it is herself, but that is not the point. The baby sees a familiar face, her own face, in the mirror. When her eyes meet her own eyes at the bottom right-hand corner of the screen, you see an expression which is of the same kind of embarrassment, the family of emotions of embarrassment, as you will see older. Okay, now her eyes are going to meet her own eyes. The power of that emotional reaction to attention, to somebody's attention, is, I think, that is what leads to the concept of self. And if you don't have that reaction, like in autism, there is again some evidence that children with autism can recognize gaze, but they don't feel that emotional reaction in the same way. So the idea of the self has got to be different there.
So actually, just to clarify then, what you're saying is that this baby doesn't have an idea of the self,
no,
but that this kind of behavior produces eventually...
Will lead to... Will be part of the idea of self.
I see.
And but if you don't have it, you will still have an idea of self, but it will be a different kind of idea.
But you would still say that the baby has a sense of self.
Yes, yes.
So that,
I would call it self-conscious feelings without the idea. One point I would like to make is that, you know, you've seen a lot of pictures of babies talking and engaging emotionally with... Does it matter if the mother does something different? Well, there are many, many studies showing that if the mothers are not... for example, if the mothers are somewhat distressed or depressed, cannot relate in that moment, in those months, so well, does it make a difference? And the answer is yes. So if you smile at me, you do something, I don't respond, right? You stop trying, or you try differently. So I put in front of you a different mother who's not depressed, for example. You will not behave, you will learn from my lack, from my pattern, different things.
How early can the children come to recognize their own mother?
Can?
Their mother, recognize their own mother.
Well, they recognize mother's voice at birth.
Kid.
At birth.
Mm-hmm. Kid.
In fact, not only can they recognize the voice, there was one very funny study where they got the mothers for 1 month before birth, I think. One group of mothers read one extract from a children's book every day. They looked at the bump and they read. Another group of mothers read a different thing. After birth, the babies were exposed either to this extract or to that extract. The one they had heard before, for 1 month before, they listened to more. They turned more towards it. So they could always already discriminate, not just the mother's voice, but what the mother was saying before birth.
Start
memorization.
I was saying you can start memorization before birth.
Less. So there are stories of lamas, unusual
and the Buddha was
cases,
born.
You know, who recite mantra. Special cases, yeah, special cases where the child recites mantra in the womb.
Yeah. It could be true. Well, maybe the child doesn't recite it, but the child can hear it for sure. One thing, this is something that Your Holiness, you were asking about the loss of openness with experience. So hearing the sounds of, like English speakers and Hindi speakers, some sounds they cannot hear. So Hindi, for example, we have ta and da, or between pa and ba. English speakers have a difficult time hearing those consonants. Newborn babies and up to the first 7, 8, 9 months, no problem. They can hear this, they can hear that. But their language exposure, by the time they get to 9 months, they stop hearing. They stop, you know, they behave like adults. And the same happens with face, discriminating faces.
That's interesting.
So, Something to do with play and playfulness. My is it?
Lare.
Yang yang chik chik di da kya gari ne po.
Lare.
Yang yang kho da.
Lare. So it's that means it's a function of familiarity.
Yes, absolutely.
The more exposed you are.
Yeah, because if you are, it makes sense that if you are learning one skill, you drop the other ones, you know? And so it has an advantage, but it also has a loss.
Yeah.
Okay, let us move to playfulness. So to teasing and to joking. Why does it matter? Why do we need to have that impulse for play? Different reasons, okay? One is, if you look at dialogue, we are talking to each other. If I'm reading from a script, okay, and I'm not listening to you, you say what you want, but I carry on reading from a script, that is not dialogue. So why not? Because something in genuine dialogue has to be alive and has to have carry something like surprise. I must not know already what it is you are going to say. If I do it, it's not genuine, it's not alive. And this is a quote from Martin Buber saying, "For what I call dialogue, there is essentially necessary the moment of surprise that I do not know and cannot know what my partner will do." So this suggests, I mean, I would say, extending to long directions, that there are dialogues that science can have, that babies can have with people, that science can have with other traditions, which have, the dialogue has not yet happened. Yeah, we stop somewhere. The babies, the mothers stop somewhere. There are paths that could be there waiting to be discovered, which we do not know. And in the creation of surprise, play, playfulness is absolutely crucial. And you cannot play again without somebody, you cannot be playful without somebody to be playful with. So if I make a joke with your highness and you don't laugh, okay? So very soon I'm going to stop trying, huh? I'm going to stop making the joke. It needs a partner. It needs a mutuality. And here is an example of Your Holiness doing at least some cases something like teasing. Yeah, you're playing a joke on someone. You're pulling somebody's beard. You're tickling someone. You're using surprise and you are creating.
Ramdev, Swami Ramdev. Yeah, I think that's Swami Ramdev, yeah.
But even babies tease. And by about 9, in fact, this clip, the photograph was, I accidentally took a video clip of my daughter offering my husband something. And because, you know, him being a man, he did not realize she was offering it to him, and she immediately pulled it back and laughed. And I accidentally videotaped this clip. And then I thought, wait a minute, this baby is 9 months old. Yeah? So she knows what he's going to do, she knows what he wants to do, and she's blocking it. She's playing with that new knowledge, with that new understanding. And from between 9 and 12 months, many kinds of teasing, huh? Not one. I'm going to touch your holiness's... I'm going to touch it. I'm not going to. It's that kind of pushing towards doing something that I must not do. Or trying to block somebody else. Main interest, how are you going to react? Okay? Now here's a clip which looks at that. It is again the baby offering something and pulling it back. One more thing. Not just teasing by provoking, but clowning by trying to make people laugh. Okay? I don't know what you were doing there, but for me it feels like clowning.
Okay, good, we're fine.
Okay, here is a baby Now, I don't know if the sound is going to go bad or
actually,
if it...
Maybe.
You see, that was, I think, most probably in Italy, I think, or in India, maybe. So, some reporter, asked me my sort of comment. Some Chinese officials describe you as a demon.
Demon, what, demon, yeah.
Demon. No? What do you feel? Then I regret that. No, I am actually a demon. So with form.
Good for you. Okay. So in this...
I also, you see, I said expressing. Now, demon's horn seems growing longer and longer.
The more we laugh. So this is a video I'm going to show you of an 8-month-old baby doing something very simple. Okay, so I don't know whether you are going to hear the sound, but I will tell you what will happen. So the baby is going under the chair, just crawling. The mother, because she knows that we are there with the camera, she says, I don't know why she says it, but she says, "Are you dancing?" So the baby looks, doesn't say anything. She says, "Are you dancing?" And the baby sits down thinking, probably thinking, why is she asking whether I'm dancing? And then she looks at the mother and she says, and the shakes her head. And the mother says, starts laughing at that, because it is something quite clever for an 8-month-old baby to do, to shake her head.
8 months.
8 months.
Language?
No.
Not yet.
Not yet. No language. I mean, not words yet.
Not speaking.
Baby.
Oh, so they understand.
Yeah. No, yes. They can hear, They can understand some, definitely, by 6 months, even earlier, they can hear some sounds. They can understand some words, meanings. So she shakes her head.
So in terms of chronology of development, when do they start saying like pa, ma?
I think very early, maybe.
With meaning or just the sound? To refer to mother, father, or just the sound?
So the word ma, the sound ma.
Okay, so from somewhere around 5, 6, 7 months, they do babbling. Ba 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 mum 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 mum. And quite often those sounds we will pick up and we will shape, you're talking about me, you're talking about me. Yeah?
So most of course, as far as I know, is some of the language. The mother, ma. Yeah.
Mostly.
Ama.
Yeah.
So that's easiest.
Easier for the tongue, yeah.
And
for
the lips.
It's almost like kind of its natural development.
It's a very simple syllable.
Lerim.
There are some languages where it is like Maharashtrian, Marathi. They say I for ma. So that does not fit the hypothesis.
Marathi ke Maharashtrian ke nalola ai lagorisa. I'm amale ai lagorisa.
Ai.
Mayo marisa. Ai. Labkha buyoris.
Then also the word ai. Ai. Na. As far as I know, Chinese kasa. O. So except Japanese. Adakshua.
Many syllables.
That's right. It's a good point.
So it seems in most languages, it's a very simple, single syllable word.
I think that is true. So, Solanas
have teased some of his Japanese friends and said, why would you Japanese want to have such complex first person pronoun?
Yes, that's true. So the baby shakes the head, because the mother finds it very funny. Laughs, and the baby then shakes the head again and again and again and again until babies do this. I will show you this video, but normally supposing you laugh at this age at something, like, for example, maybe you have a cough, and I'm the baby, and I get interested in the sound, and I go, and everybody laughs. So for the next 2 weeks, I will go, and again, and until it becomes boring, okay? But at that point, it is the laughter of the others that is entering, that is creating that action of the baby. It is, if you like, entering the self. Okay, so have a look at this one. The shaking the head is the behavior that the mother laughs at. Are you dancing? Are you dancing?
Dancing and singing. No, you're not dancing. No. No.
So both all of these forms of playfulness, the response of the other and the act, the play of the baby, are part of the same thing. Yeah. Okay, last slide. I want to summarize what we have been talking about. In principle, I want to talk about this giving a special status to the thou, to seeing people as a you. It is not just a developmental point that if you don't speak directly to the baby as a you, the baby will not develop nicely or in the way that we expect. It is also an attitude, it involves an attitude of respect for the person, for any person, even in adulthood, of caring, and of recognition of the personness of the other person. Now, there are many situations in everyday life when, you know, as I said, you can deal with your students or your staff in a way that is based on rules or in a way that is based allowing yourself, or when you walk down that road and see the beggars on the, you know, what do? We avoid gaze, because as soon as you look at them, you are confronting the person. And if you were to recognize the person, you could not bear it. So you avoid it. You put something else. You put a filter of a word, a category around it, and you stop seeing it. Or, for example, in the cases of abuse of people, child abuse, right? What is happening there? The person of the child somehow has been lost within the category of, I have a problem, for whatever reason, right? Or in the case of advice that we give to parents, I have had an experience recently where a mother whose baby was not sleeping phoned me up. They had gone to a consultant, I don't know who it was, who told her, put the baby in another room, don't go in, let the baby cry. And 1 hour and 20 minutes later, the mother was in tears and said, I cannot stand this. And what should I do? What should I do? And now, the answer is not simple, because if the baby doesn't sleep, you get tired, you get exhausted. But the answer does not lie so much in following rule books. The answer has to involve seeing the baby as a person. If you don't do that, what you're doing is you're abandoning the relation to the books. Now, this is one of the ethical implications of the Taoness, I think. And it has implications also for science in different ways. One, you could argue that the self contains the world, that the self contains the Tao and the whole world, you know, in the sense that the world's responses enter the self. But also in data collection, every study that I have done, and there are some more which I did not talk about, every study that I have done came from my knowledge of the history and the experience, the emotional reaction to the baby doing something and thinking, how did this happen? And then you do another study and you explain. Now, in science, we usually discourage involvement. So you take them into the lab, you cut the relation because you want clean data. And we are all trained as much as possible to do that. I think that cutting of relation...
Then I dog relationship gay shape called Amada, Puchunjungi Pazu, Jewa, the Shimish Gage Machagorva, Pugu Tonace, Amade Lente, any Amade Lente, but the Pugu Tsu Lente, the Degatone, the Salon Chevon Dugala, the Dinan Debatone, Terrile, Ketayores, Terrigi, Moranshim Juchebekala, Legari Mangbuchi, Jidan Terrigon Ranjeva, the Tata, Zamoku Dugala, any Panangolia. 간다 지금 third person 소리 지금 칠원에 대별 처마도 가두기 the first person the second person 그 대별 또는 지나 따라 조금 차가 있어 내시에서 이거를 나올로 소원에 비켜지 되는 거라서
So the way we collect data, you know, if good data comes in relation, study the relation. Don't study the isolated. It's very difficult actually to translate into practice, but it has to be the answer. It has to be the way forward. But also what we do with the data after we gather it. Do we sit there as the experts and give the rules? Or do we say we know a little bit, we can advise somewhat, but the real answer lies in the relation. So somehow to empower engagement rather than the cult of the expert is, I think, extremely crucial. Because we give up ourselves if we stop recognizing the other. And as soon as we worship books rather than relation, we're giving up
itself and others. And the Shilisha rules of research, that two children. The D, Chitanda, Tachiko, Tegana, Lukabena, and Yabomidus, and the Amada Pugu Deva, the Katu Susuki, Nyongo, was long.
And maybe this also is relevant, most difficult, but relevant in conflict resolution, where if we have the attitude of respect or seeing the person as a person, maybe that is the only way we can go forward with dealing with.
Nobody used to kill ya conflict resolution. Chebekala chonyega chigichilia dona che first person the second person ko dona relationship na.
So in a strange way, from science, coming from very early infancy, I'm also arguing not a Buddhist argument, but an argument against the dominance of concepts. And I stop there.
Thank you.
Okay. So Vasu, these examples were all from families that are small nuclear families. What happens, for example, or does your research address how the self is formed in, for example, an extended family system? Or not even an extended family system, but where the village is sort of the caring organism. Because it seems like the small nuclear family really emphasizes individuality and selfness. Is the self, for example, conceptually characterized by notions of a distributed self? Should there be, for example, many caregivers?
Many caregivers. I think all the phenomena that I spoke about, like teasing or clowning or feeling shy or any of the other phenomena that I could have talked about, they would be no different. They would be, if you like, multiplied in some ways because there are many caregivers to joke with the baby when the mother is tired. There would be a lesser impact about nuclear family neuroses because there are so many other people to stand in. And there is some research showing that in some cultures, not about extended families, because that it can have a variety of different effects, but some cultures, the face-to-face interaction is not so marked early on. Other modalities, like carrying on the back and dancing, but that is also engagement. Yeah. Different modalities can take over in some places.
So we're going to move into a conversation. Indeed, we already have moved into a conversation. But before we do, just I'd like to ask His Holiness if he has any comments or questions that he'd like to begin with. Otherwise, we'll just move on into our conversation. Do you have anything you'd like to address right now, Your Holiness?
I think in order to sort of raise questions, I think first let me put you some child. And then some experience.
Okay.
But then I think
okay.
Something to say. Otherwise, nothing.
We have a child. Well, on that note, maybe we can pursue, Your Holiness. Maybe actually I'll ask Roshi Joan Halifax to continue. There is a line of questioning you started. Maybe you could just clarify a little more, because I think you were headed in a certain direction. And then we'll go with Mathieu. If you have a question that's in the same line of questioning, let me know, and otherwise we'll move on to the next after that. Thank you.
So I think my question has to do with the reification of the self. And is the style of parenting, for example, in Western culture, which we've seen primarily exemplified, does that reify the sense of self?
I think.
And are there other styles of parenting that we could, you know, explore where the self is distributed, for example?
Okay, I have a very.
So go ahead.
If you're in a family and you're a baby and somebody is constantly saying, do you want this, do you want this, or do you want that? You are being given choices, right? In a sense, that could be one way of which some of your actions, not all of them, because some of them have happened before anybody asked for them, some of your actions are being encouraged as being yours. So the answer I would say is yes. And in other sources, I know this, when I first went to the UK after some years, when somebody comes and interferes when I'm cooking, add some salt or taste this, I'm thinking, I'm cooking it. Why are you helping? You know, why are you? So it's a kind of a sense of it is my task or it is my choice, you know, which is very individual, very individualist in a way. But
is this a follow-up on that?
Yes.
Yeah. Go ahead. Go ahead. All right, Matthew, please.
What about the number of person relating to a very young infant, whether it has influence compared to just the mother? There have been studies finding that apes, usually they keep their infants without letting any other member, even siblings, to touch the newborn because it's kind of dangerous. But now we come to humans. If you look at collective societies, there was a study in a tribe in Africa called the Asda, and they found that a newborn is held average by 18 people within 24 hours. And that the continuous relation with different faces, with different people, seems to be crucial to the development of empathy and facial recognition. And the same researcher, who's called Sarah Hirdi, she's supposed that in modern times, when there's often a mononuclear family with father, mother, and one child or two child, that richness might be a cause of decline of empathy, and she found that maybe from the daycare, if it's well done, where they put the children, young children with many others, might be a sort of antidote to that risk.
Replacement for.
Then the Africa such a chilly, a poor chunju kids na, nyema chig na angolia, mitchop kids chig puya kasares, tap kimze da, paman ten nujolia the.
Yes.
I just wanted to follow up on your question. There's been a lot of work on independent versus interdependent models of self across culture. Let me give you three examples from studies. If you ask American college students, fill in I am something, they'll say things like, I am outgoing, I am funny, I am smart, things that are personal qualities. If you ask students in Japan or in China to do this, they'll say, I am a daughter, I am a sister, I am a student of my teacher. So they will give relations that they have to other people. And you can see these differences actually emerging in the brain. So there are some studies where people are asked to imagine themselves or think about properties that are true to them or think about their mothers. And when American college students do this, themselves and their mothers are very separate representations. But when the Chinese students do this, themselves and their mothers are overlapping representations. And the last example is from choice, which is what Vasu raised. This is a comparison between India and America. If kids are told, here's a lot of possible toys you could play this with, here's the one that your mom chose for you. The question is, do they like that toy better now that they know their mom chose this toy? American kids don't want to play with that toy. They want to choose their own. But the Indian kids are excited to play with the toy that their mom chose because it's so wonderful that she cared enough to choose a toy. And so, of course, she must know something and care for them. So just three examples of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sojong pamen sojong chitang to na rishung ta de to na kiban dos ben amrige lubru zolia shugu ji de je nga thi si ji de se de ki de tik tong ba sha de su ju yang go es de su ju go amrige lubru zol te ju go ane nga tu repos chang bu ye nga mele de wa che ke bu ye sen su su ger ki ke ju nyan de je ge res shug che er de ge mi lubru zolia de shug ta garan je be na ane nga pomoyi kasa nga ame pomoyi nga lutruyi skanda shendan dewe yebege keju ge ngunje shukche dewe de chige dus tena shi tanda ya sane chilia amrige buguta lobe bugunye lia bugu chunju ge tmo zeya ge zeje dewe ka lia an amrige bugu zolia an ce zeje dige de nan kran dam shos ine kran ga ama ge di dam sons kran ine kran dewe ches labena ari pugzo ame damjo da member khanda ji ji mi che tin dam gyo res en lobe ji zo de na lo ya en ame dam gyo de la ga che che ti zo chun chun ne ko so jong che dang ga to ne ki ban do su are
wa ya go ro le ne ta ga da ku yu gi shu jin te sa
so we are talking about children who are kind of fairly older, who have already inculcated the environmental and cultural influences.
Yes. Experience.
Yeah.
Your Holiness, I wanted to raise another question, and I recognize that you've never been a parent, but all of the monastics have been children at one point, so you all have had parents. Given the kind of insights that we've learned from Vasu's work and the discussion that we've had about how the self emerges and how it may become reified, I wonder if there's anything, any insights that you might have from your own childhood or from stories of the parenting of great masters or the early education of great masters, or monastic training, anything about early education or early relationships with caring adults that may be useful in gleaning insights about how we can raise children to have a less reified sense of self.
Mare ta ngao nyam be tam zin shuk chim bo yor ta kang mang bu chi dang zin shuk chim bo chi ton yong gu de gala ta di te den de tam zin shuk chim bo ma yo ya di tap she le ya ta lao ta kan ta bu gu chun ju ne gong dang ge ton le bu gu chun ju gong dang ge ton le ya
I don't know. Of course, one thing I always mentioning, my mother, very very kind mother, so as usual, I think the mother, out of several children, the mother, the youngest, usually used to take pay more attention. So my mother, I really believe a mother's sort of kindness, affection, very important.
Mm.
even physical level. Mother's always extremely kind face, and always physical hugging.
Hugging, love. Oh.
Then the child really feel safe.
Safe.
Lam. I think a physical development also. One time, one scientist, now he no longer
alive.
Because of Bob Livingston.
Bob Livingston. Yeah.
Oh, he mentioned after birth, next few weeks, mother's physical touch is crucial factor for proper enlargement
of the brain,
they say. So, the loving kindness is the basis of our proper development of this body as well as this mind. That much I know. Otherwise, when I carry study, I think basically I was a very, very lazy student. So my study mostly is carry under threat. My tutor always keep on a whip. So out of
a whip, yeah.
Oh, so out of fear, carry study. So that is something, Kasoda.
That's the answer.
Kasoda. No. That's, I think, the
So, but this is not an example you would want to take.
Yes, please.
Following up on your question, there are different ways that people have of referring to themselves that are polite. So in Javanese, for example, kids are seen as rude if they say I about themselves. So if I say, I want strawberries, my Javanese parents will say, who do you think you are? I'm supposed to say, Lara wants strawberries. So I talk about myself from the third person, from the outside. And no one has done studies about this, but one possibility is that actually allows you to see yourself more from the outside, less from the inside yourself.
And the Javanese, Indonesia, then Javanese, Lia, Jizo Joris, and Pukunjunzo, Lia, Indonesia, and Pukunjunzo, Nadi going 80 chevis, and Nasa Tanya Pejuchevena, the root of Shuzigoris, Timerus, Susuming the Merge, to the engine bed, the chevres, the lover was.
Can't
So it's also partly a function of language as well, because, for example, in English sentences, you have to use the pronouns all the time. So if you're talking about yourself, you always have to say, I did this, Whereas in Tibetan, you know, often you the don't sentences need to, don't need any pronouns. And then even when we use pronouns... Because most of the sentences, when you have the verb, the particular verb ending, the what person, whether first, second, or third, is already indicated. And furthermore, his students were saying that even when people have to use the personal pronoun, they generally tend to use in the plural form. So we have, you know, nga and ngatso. So we tend to use the plural form.
One sort of rather funny thing. One also was the minister, actually who signed 17-point agreement, Mr. Ngabe. A few years ago, he passed away.
In China, the minister who signed the 17-point agreement with China.
This is Ngabe who named you. They sold out. Saudi, Sung Devi Yamare. Namji Sung Mindo. Nanzu Sungre. Nanzu.
Less.
Any? That Jamjung Sasu Sungre. Less. This is Jamjung the Chokashi.
But sometimes. So sometimes this usage of the plural instead of the singular first person can be odd, because Ngabu Ngawanjingme, he very rarely used the first person, you know, singular, so he would use always this plural. But then when he talks about his wife, it almost sounds as if his wife has many husbands. You need to listen through the...
When you... I'm going to translate in English. At the time of, you know, the baby in the bone, to when you feel the feelings of... happiness and sad, when it benefits you, then it we consider it's a, you know, joyful experience. But when it is not needed for you, then you consider it as the bad experience. But that self, and the word, the definition for I, there are many definitions for that I, that word I. But your feeling has to be there. The individual's feeling has to be there. Feeling for self. Self, I mean, feeling of joy. When you think about I, but there has to be intrinsically, you know, have feeling for joy. There has to be a feeling of joy. You know, that the physical expressions of, you know, like uneasiness and everything is because that you don't want that uneasiness. Even though there is not the sound related to that word.
So, Geshe-la was saying that, you know, there was a consensus that even in the womb, the child is able to experience pain and pleasure.
Yep.
Child's able to engage and react.
Yep, it's true. I think.
So if that is the case, then the child must also be able to differentiate, like, what is pleasure and what is pain, and have some kind of aversive or more kind of, you know, desiring relationship with the experience of pain and pleasure. And that presupposes some kind of sense of self.
Yep.
So Geshe-la was arguing, you know, whether even to have a notion of self, you need a language. Because the languages are expressed in many different ways, and not all languages use the same term to refer to I or self. So the question is, I think in other words, Geshe-la really is asking about, you know, how do you define a child having a concept of self versus a yes. sense of self. That right. really seems to be
in other
question.
Words, that self that's required...
So, for example, in... Let him.
We're going to translate.
Maranzo, that's...
Geshe-la was making the point that in animals, you know, there must be some sense of self.
Absolutely.
Because they're able to distinguish who their, you know, offsprings are versus
yeah.
others.
Yeah.
And but there is no language. There is no language-based concept. And but His Holiness was reinforcing the point that the moment you have a person or a being that is able to distinguish between, you know, that is able to have an aversive reaction to pain and
yeah.
More kind of approaching relationship with pleasure,
yeah.
that experience of pain and pleasure has to be associated with some kind of experiencer.
And
there is a kind of a sense of self. There has to be
a concept,
yeah.
you mean?
Yes.
You mean that?
Well, no, that's not necessarily conceptual, actually. What Geshe-la was saying is that it doesn't need language.
No, I agree,
yeah.
it doesn't.
It doesn't.
Okay, there's...
So we don't... Whether that's conceptual or not, the point is that there is some kind of sense of self
yeah.
And what's the difference between that sense of self and what you're talking about?
I'm talking about that sense of self which becomes bigger. Because as it becomes bigger, it contains more of the world in it. Okay, here is one study, very briefly. In the womb, twin fetuses were again filmed with ultrasound, 4G ultrasound, so you can actually tell more detail. Now, what they measured was the speed of the, let us say, arm movements. Okay, so the fetuses are doing this a little bit. They measured the velocity and the amount of starting and then slowing down of the arm movements when the arm movements were directed to the self, when the arm movements were directed to the other twin, and when the arm movements were directed to the wall of the uterus. Okay? When the movements to the twin were slower, they took longer and there was more slowing down compared to movements to self or to the wall of the uterus. That's one thing. When the movements to self were to the eye region versus the mouth or body region, the eye region movements were slower than the others. So, two things. One is they were already detecting, this is very early in the pregnancy, in the middle of the pregnancy, something between how the body of the twin moves and how the uterine wall is and how different from the self, different from my movement to myself. They were already detecting something about the need for delicacy in the eye region, to be slower and more careful in the eye region than to the other. So a sense of this sense of self is neither conceptual nor linguistic. It is just a very basic property of a living organism, which is beginning to become more and more and more expert in moving in the world. Right? And the more you engage with the world, twin body, or the more the response of the body of the other, of the world, comes in to make yourself. So I don't understand, actually, Your Holiness, where is the illusion here?
It's okay. No, it's okay.
Holiness is wondering, although of course we all agree that there is no language-based concept, which is just too complicated, but can one still argue that there might be some kind of rudimentary form of concept of self in this very early stage?
Awareness of self? Why concept?
Well, I mean, some kind of reference. You know, kind of.
There must be some kind of
reference,
sense of difference.
So for example, in the womb, when the child is distinguishing between what is painful and what is joyful, has so, you know, not at a very, very early stage of pregnancy, but at some point when there is this capacity to experience pain and pleasure and differentiate and have aversive reaction to it, to the pain, then, you know, at that point, there is an ability to recognize and differentiate, discriminate between pain and pleasure.
Yep.
So, and that, and also has some ability to relate to that to your experience.
This is the same experience.
Yeah. Now, of course, there is no word-based kind of concepts. But
you can see this in Drosophila, in a fruit fly, or in a plesia, or a worm.
So I think, I mean, one thing that would be helpful from my point of view is that since you talk about distinction between the sense of self that can be very, very early versus the concept of self that arises a bit later.
Yep.
And how would you differentiate between the two, and where in temporal stage would you delineate? That would be really helpful.
Okay.
The children, we know that have concepts, they have ideas, they know what they want, they ask for it. So concept, just to have acquisition of concepts does not really require the acquisition of language.
But they precede.
Yeah, they precede language, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So then the question is, you know.
Okay, one way of looking at the concept of self is to say...
Which one?
Is to use that mirror test.
You want to go first?
That is very, yeah. Very late, 18.
So would you say it needs a reflexivity?
Yes, but then I would also say...
That the concept, the self-concept, no, that's it. To what extent His Holiness is wondering, this debate is about semantics.
It could be, but I mean, yes, okay. Okay, 2 points. One is the reflexivity. If I'm moving towards something and I change my direction and correct it, that involves not only awareness of where to move, but also how to correct it. And in terms of reaching for objects, by 3 and 4 months, infants are correcting their actions in space. So a minimum kind of reflexivity, not in a...
self-conscious.
Not in the way concepts are defined by psychology, for instance, in terms of representations, but in some other simple sense of being aware of action in progress in the world. Okay, so that is kind of very early. So if your answer, when do concepts begin, I would also say that it begins very gradually. Everything I have studied shows a kind of impulse towards continuity. I'm still a little bit curious about illusion, though. I don't know whether it's
Trunang, illusion. You want to? Yes,
so
please.
I actually want to just ask Vasu and His Holiness whether it sounds like you have a sort of sensory motor theory of the foundation of the self.
And emotional. So.
And emotion. And you've sort of been alluding to that. But it seems like that's a direct challenge to some of the other presentations during the week, and I guess I would connect your ideas to a little bit in Pavan's presentation about the autistic children engaged in the pursuit who were unable to do the following because of their sensory motor integration being, abnormal. And then, you know, some of the material that I presented about the bodily self and how there's a bodily aspect to self-processing. So I guess I'm asking both of you if this sort of sensory motor notion of the self as a foundation for the emergence of true selfhood, does that shed any light? Can you sort of speak to that? And does that shed any light on any of the other conceptual problems that we've been talking about this week?
I've got one answer I can give you. One is that the prediction issue. One of the things that Kanna noticed about autism is that, well, the parents were reporting that the children with autism, you go to pick them up, they don't reach out. They don't adjust their body. Yeah. They don't anticipate. So we looked at typically developing babies to see, okay, when does it begin? Okay, when does this response, anticipatory adjustment of the body, which is pretty... 2-month-olds, right? Probably not earlier, but we started the study from two... But 3-month-olds, very fluent. 2-month-olds, very clear. They were doing things like widening their arms, and they were stretching their legs out to stiffening them, or they were tightening their bodies up, lifting their chin up, all of which was making the body a little bit more rigid before the mother made contact. Okay? It's not conscious. It is a sense of, I'm doing this in relation to this. I have learned what's going to happen. I know what's going to happen. I'm doing it. So how that connects with the development of that embodied, if you like, self-response, connects with the concept, I don't know. All we know is that in terms of pieces of the puzzle, this is another piece of the puzzle where self is somewhat damaged or problematic in autism, and these are supposedly also problematic.
Yes, Olinda, there's a question for you. Yes. So it's just a practical question. In pregnancy where there's a twins, say about fifth, sixth months, so when, you know, the fetus have developed much more, are there instances where they actually try to squeeze each other and compete?
I think probably yes.
Competition.
I don't know the
other. One, yes. One, you see, feel a little bit. Two,
squeezed.
Then like that.
Try to push and make more room.
That clearly shows not a choice at least.
Then there is a real, that shows that there is a distinction between me and you.
Yeah, because it is not cooperative, it is conflictual. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the question...
I don't know the answer. My guess is probably yes, but I don't know. I find out.
Do you want to say something on that?
Yeah.
Well, I'm trying to organize this discussion in my head, and I'm trying to figure out what are the behaviors, the minimal set of behaviors that we would think of as constituting self. So I can easily program, or fairly straightforwardly program, a robot to do all of the things that babies, certainly in utero, are doing, and even 1 or 2 month old babies are doing. Would we be comfortable in saying that that programmed entity has a sense of self?
No, but could you program some of the behaviors that adults do, which you would consider self? And if yes, and if we wouldn't consider that, then the same question applies.
Well, so the broader question is, just like we can envision a Turing test for intelligence, can we envision a Turing test for self? So two entities, how would one entity that could potentially be artificial, what would you need to see in it in order to convince yourself that has a sense of self?
Self-other discrimination, which is present very early, as we know, the ability to move appropriately, either motorically move or emotionally move appropriately in space and time. That would be my off-the-top-of-the-head quick...
But that we are already at. I mean, they are in a robot. Yeah, a robot can already do that.
But can robots engage emotionally as well?
Yeah, with facial expression, yes. In Japan, they made a robot that does...
Yeah. So let me simplify the question. A robot can certainly mimic most of the behaviors of a simple animal. So Richie mentioned Aplysia drosophila. We can certainly program a robot to do that and probably a little bit more. So if we are willing to impute selfness to Drosophila... The question.
No, well, it depends. I mean, I would be willing to give some degree of minimal selfness to Drosophila. I would even be willing to give it to amoeba. There was a paper in 1934 by Samuel or something talking about the different groupings of bacteria, in-group and out-group groupings. Okay, they're not a very sophisticated sense of self, but there is something to do with I belong here and that belongs there, something, right? The question about if you can program a computer to do it, would you therefore invalidate this? I find that very odd because, I mean, if you can paint something to look deceptively like reality, does that make that reality any less real?
Right. So I'm completely with you. In fact, I was going to ask, why is it that we are so resistant to ascribing self to a silicon-based entity?
iRobot. Okay, I get you.
Well, let's see if Lara's on this.
Just a follow-up. I think the mechanism by which these things are accomplished is really important. So a single-cell organism can avoid and can approach, and even a magnet will repel some things and attract other things, right? But we don't want to say a magnet has a sense of self because it can attract other some things and repel others, because the mechanism is different. So thinking about the mechanism by which a baby desires things as opposed to tries to avoid things is really important, not just the mere fact that some things are attractive and some things are repelled.
Something about the autonomous, or not autonomous is a bad word to use here, but something about the origins of the process.
Jay, I think you had something you wanted to bring us back to, maybe?
Yes, I get worried that we're using the word concept and self in about six different ways in this conversation, and we risk talking past each other. So I think that Vasu's been, in general, very careful about distinguishing between having this general sense of self and having a concept of a self. And one of the things, we've used the word concept in many ways. One way that we could use it would be to be a broad set of capacities with respect to something. And one of the things that Vasu is pointing out is the set of capacities that a child has develops gradually. So where that threshold is, where it gets broad enough, that we would say that there's enough diversity and capacity that we have a concept and not just a set of responses, may be a fuzzy matter. But another sense of concept is that a concept is a one over many. That is, it's a repeatable property that other things have. In that sense, I think, again, when Vasu said that in utero and maybe even right after birth, there may be no concept of a self because an infant may not be recognizing any other things as of the same kind. So you don't have a kind or a general representation yet. Mm. Though when that representation becomes general may also be fuzzy, and it may develop rather quickly. None of that requires language. On the other hand, when language emerges, then it's possible to get a richer kind of concept, a concept that we can deploy, that we can use for explicit inferences, that we can use cross-modally and so forth. And that's going to be, you know, I think a very dangerous concept, because that's when reification is likely to begin. But we really have to keep these things separate, and we don't want to assimilate. We don't want to assimilate and treat as the same rich conceptual inferential activity and mere attraction and aversion, even though they may be on a continuum.
You're on this, right? Go. Okay. Why don't we get Lara first, because I think she's right on this one. Go ahead.
I completely agree with what you just said, that there's many stages of the development of concepts and making them richer and richer. One thing I want to be careful about is the way we talk about language emerging. So we talk about babies that don't have language and then babies that have language. That's not how it works. Babies start to acquire language before they're even born, and they continue to do so until they're dead, right? So it's an ongoing process. And so long before kids start to speak, they're responding to language. And actually, they're... So long before babies start to speak, they're not only responding to language, but they're actually changing the way they attend to the world because words are being used to them. They're starting to group things in different ways when words are present as opposed to otherwise. So that effect is happening very, very early.
Thank you. Matthew?
About the robot argument, you have also these puppets with strings. You could have a puppet that manifests emotion, gets angry, and everybody laughs, but you will never even imagine that the puppet has a sense of self. Now, a robot is a more sophisticated version because someone programmed it to react appropriately according to what we know about emotion. It didn't come out of the blue. So we know that some robots can learn simple things and accumulate knowledge. But if ever the famous question by asking a robot, can you distinguish between a sentient being and a robot and having a sense of self, instead of just the behavior, you could ask existential questions. When you don't think about anything, how do you feel? When there's no concept, do you have a sense of self? Are you worried what will happen to you when the battery goes off? Or something like that.
Well, we're just about at the end of the session. I'm wondering if we can take one moment, Your Holiness, and there is a question that I'm very curious about that Vasuji actually asked a couple of times, which is an interesting question. In what way can we say that the sense of self of an infant in relation to its mother is actually, in some sense, confused, that it is a truche?
So the Buddhist really explanation is that the seed for confusion and distortion is beginningless. It's imprints that is carried over from past lives. This kind of illusion or this kind of distortion is not part of the essential quality of the mind itself, which is this mere luminosity. But at the same time, the imprints are brought over from since beginningless lifetimes. So it's kind of innate. But because it is not part of the essential quality of the mind itself, there is the recognition that in principle, the mind can be discriminated or differentiated from these kind of delusory processes. A simple sense of conventional, agency, personhood, that would be present even in someone like the fully enlightened Buddha.
Without being prey to illusion and
delusion.
Well, I think perhaps on that note, it's just about 3:00. I want to thank Your Holiness very much, and Vasu for a wonderful presentation, and our faculty for a great conversation. We'll now have a tea break. We'll now have a tea break. At 3:30, we reconvene for question and answer. And then remember, 7 p.m. tonight, there's a dialogue between the young scientists and the young monastics. Thank you very much.